ladies and gentlemen. You are now entering the Decent Christian Talk podcast. Enjoy.
Decent Christian Talk episode number 116.
116.
Hey everybody, I'm Gabe Jones.
I am Josiah.
And Happy New Year, everybody. It's the first...
For the fans! Well, wait, sorry.
Oh, sorry. Did I not do that?
You messed me up. I normally...
This is a show for the fans.
By the fans. Dang it.
And it is a new year, 2021. Happy New Year, guys.
We are here.
Yes. And where are we? This is a new studio.
It is a different room, but the same studio, 13 Palm Trees Podcast Productions, has upgraded.
Yes.
This is nice.
Courtesy of the 304 Collective here in Fairmont, West Virginia. So thanks to all that are involved with that. And we appreciate that because this is really nice. But yeah, this is the first episode of 2021. We are very excited to bring to you a great interview today by David from Remedy Drive.
We have had David on the show before, but the last time I had him on the show, Gabe was in the middle of, you know, having a kid, and we got put into, there was a schedule conflict at Creation Festival, and we got stuffed into a sound trailer, and there was drums playing, and there was a whole bunch of noise, and I had one of my favorite interviews. David was probably my favorite interview of all time. And I went back and listened to it on my phone, and you couldn't hear a word he said. Mm. I was so upset. But
you can hear it today.
You can hear it today, and I'm so stinking excited because, I mean, we published that interview, and we did the best we could to clean it up. But as in this business, when you're backstage and you're juggling things, sometimes it doesn't always work out in your favor. But that was just a little story.
Yeah.
Just to... I don't know. I'm excited that we have this guy and we can hear it, and it's exciting.
Well, this was recorded via Zoom in my living room, so the most you'll hear is a dog in the background walking around.
It's always acceptable.
All right. So before we get into that, we need to talk about our Patreon page. Hey, it's the beginning of the year, and as always, we have some costs, and you guys have helped us for many, many years now. Helped pay those costs and offset those costs, and we really appreciate that. And you can join our team in 2021 for as low as $1 a month on patreon.com/decentchristiantalk, and you can get some great things such as bonus episodes. We've got a great bonus episode coming out, and we are going to be discussing our throwback album of the year that turns 25 years old this year, and it's the debut of Third Day.
Yes. All our bonus episodes are good.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking about that. I'm excited, too. I actually went back and listened to this album this week, so I'm psyched to talk about it. It's better than I remember, and it's quite the kickoff to a great career. So I'm excited to talk about that. I'm also excited for you guys to listen to this interview because it is amazing. Remedy Drive has been around for a while. But this is their new album is coming out this Friday as of the release of this podcast. So this is quite the preview.
Yeah, we kind of, you know, I'm excited because their music is always good. And I'm personally excited to see what he's done with, you know, the time this year. This is almost the kickoff in my head to a lot of music that's been written while musicians were sitting at home. So I don't know. I just think that we're going to have some very interesting music, and no better way to start it off than with Remedy Drive.
And we're going to start it off right now. Without further ado, here's our interview with Remedy Drive's David Zach.
All right, hit that horn, babe. Let's dance.
How you been? I mean, this has been a weird year with everything, with closed shutdowns and quarantines and How's this last year been for you?
Not having income would be the major downside of the past 10 months. Yeah. But making a record I'm really proud of and that I really believe in and turns out to be very timely, I hope, is something I'm glad that I used this time for. I got good at, my father-in-law bought me a Final Cut Pro, so I've learned to edit video way better than I used to. So, you know, as you always wonder, you hit 41 and you wonder what you're going to be doing in 10 years, you know?
Right.
I've never, maybe, you know, still making music. I hope so, but trying to branch out and make sure I'm planning for the future too.
It's good to be innovative when you're independent.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like, so what's that creative process for you? Because a lot of times when people write music, that looks a lot different for different people. But what does that look like for you? Sometimes people might struggle if they're stuck at home. Some people, that's how they like it. So, I mean, how has that been for you during this creative process?
I've always been like a slow burn when it comes to writing. Like, I've never just sat down, other than a few writing sessions where I wrote with some people, but I never just sit down and write a full song. Hmm. And if I do, I'm writing, I'm compiling something that's been stewing for quite a long time. So I'm always paying attention in movies, in some of my favorite homilies and speeches, in other songs, in ancient scripture. I'm always paying attention to things that are being said, and I'm cataloging it, sometimes consciously, sometimes unconsciously, into different categories. And those end up becoming the foundation for songs when the time comes to put it down. Or sometimes I have a melody. And what was fun about doing all those live streams in March and April and May, especially in March, there was just this sense of togetherness that was palpable. You could feel it. We all were scared, you know. We all were faced with something that we hadn't faced before. Unless you're 80 something, you hadn't faced a worldwide pandemic. And I think that, so I'd just be there on my piano playing piano, and sometimes there'd be 7,000 people would watch some of these live streams. It was such a special time. Songs dating back 20 years, being, you know, I relearned them when people would request them. And during that live stream, sometimes I just played the piano and not sing as transitioned to another song. And some of the melodies that I kept on coming back to night after night during those sessions ended up being melodies on this new album, Imago Amor. Mm. So it's kind of cool that it was written in this collective way.
Yeah. And it, you know, I've always wondered, you know, as an artist, when you're, you know, you get a lot of energy from the live crowd. How has that been just kind of to a computer screen, yet you know you have an audience, but like, how's that contrast between a live show when there's a live audience there in front of you, as opposed to it's there, but you can't really see them?
It's like tofu when you're used to eating steak. It's good, but it's not great.
Right, right. And and I think the hardest part is, well, for one, they're not paying to see you, so that income is not there. But also, like, that the feedback is different too, right? Like, there's comments, but it's not the same as like people screaming and singing along, and so. It's things that will be written about for ages to come this past year, for sure.
But in other ways, though, it reminded me that the biggest impact that I've had really isn't concerts. Mm. You know, that's what I do. That's what I see. That's where I see people singing along. But remembering that, you know, I look on Spotify and I see 1.4 million plays on one of my songs, right? No, you know, I don't know if I've played in front of a million people or not in a live setting. It's hard to count. It'd be hard to count. But knowing that millions of people have heard the music, and so in that way, that's the way most of my contribution to culture has been, through the airwaves, right? So in this way, I'm a little more involved when it's in person, when it's online in person. So I'm seeing those hearts or the comments or people sharing stories. I was really touched yesterday. A woman reposted something we had posted and said, my family, David might not remember this, but he held my son when he was a baby, and my son's 11 now. And for these past 11 years, daylight has been part of our family tradition. That's remarkable. You know, I don't take that lightly. That's a big deal that our songs have been part of people's family traditions. They've been in people's vehicles. And so I know that this just is what it is. That first month, you know, that first day when Tom Hanks said he had COVID, that night all my events for that weekend canceled, and then the next day all my events for the next 2 weeks canceled. And that was, you know, that was January through March. March was making up for January and February taking off, going overseas with the Exodus Road. So it was like what our family needed was those events to happen. So I very quickly had to make peace with the fact that this is what it is. And while it hurts us profoundly, it doesn't pale in comparison to so many people that don't have access to the social safety nets that I have. Not just being able to remortgage my house, which is very helpful, but I know that there's so many people that would come to our aid in a heartbeat if we needed it, you know. And most people in the world don't have that, and that's so it brought me face to face with my own privilege, and gave me a chance to be thankful for that and demonstrate to my kids how thankful we are in the midst of this tragic situation. But to know that most people in the world don't have access to medicine, to education, to any of the things that in general pull them up.
Right.
So it affects us more. It affects me and you more because we're used to having some level of access to and having that a little bit of vulnerability. We feel for a little bit this year what most of the world and most people that have ever lived feel all the time.
I think it's interesting. A lot of your music through the years has been about hope and giving people hope. And in this year especially, people feel the opposite of that. They feel hopeless. They feel they don't see the light at the end of the tunnel. So I know like this album and the last couple albums have been about like trafficking, but when you look through the lens of a lot of people that have been going through what they've been going through this last few years, you know, the title track, especially with this album, about being made in the image of love. I mean, have you like looked back at the creative process and kind of re-looked at some of these songs and said, well, you know, this might actually be good for this season because of this, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And that's the beauty of songwriting. For 12 years, you know, I was saying daylight is coming, hopes, not giving up. And then to sing those songs during those live streams in a very specific context, right, about all the loss of income that not only I but so many people are experiencing. And the same way with Dragons, the title track, I wrote that in Thailand a year ago when I probably had COVID because we were with the Exodus Road, and I was deployed with a team of Westerners to help support our local teams in Thailand fighting against sex trafficking. And so we were doing undercover work. I was in really close proximity with a lot of young teenage Thai girls that were being trafficked from the countryside. And it was their first week in prostitution because a lot of girls that were already in prostitution were trafficked over to China for the Chinese New Year. And so there's a high demand and not enough supply in Thailand at the time. So there's a lot of cross-border travel between Thailand and China. And there was a lot of uncertainty at that time for the Exodus Road, as there always is in any organization. What's the best way forward? And Matt from the Exodus Road got a tattoo that said, "Huc sunt Dracones," on his arm, and I got a tattoo the same place in Thai on my chest that says, "Love justice, seek mercy, walk with humility before your Maker." Mm. And it was in context with the fact that here in Thailand, in Southeast Asia in general, old maps would just have a dragon. And it'd say, "Here be dragons. There's danger here. These waters are uncharted. We don't know what's here. Use caution." And so that line, the album starts with, "These waters are uncharted and here there be dragons." The dragons of uncertainty, the dragons of danger, the dragons of fear, the dragons of whatever those dragons represent. That's my goal with this album, is that it doesn't have to just be specific to the injustice of trafficking, even though it is.
Sure.
And I think good art needs to do that.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest, for lack of a better term, storylines of the last year has been, like, one of the big stories was Black Lives Matter. And there's a lot of people that have felt like they don't matter for whatever reason, whether it be oppression, whether it be because they're refugees, or, you know, just, I don't know. And then there's the backlash with that, like nationalism and all that. Sometimes I feel the tension in these songs when it comes to that, and that going through and listening to that. And I think that's cool. You know, especially with dragons, you know, that's just an amazing image that you can see. And that's one thing that I appreciated listening to this album is that, looking back through this year and looking at the images and the videos that went viral and everything, what kind of went through your mind when it came to when you saw just people hurting because they wanted to matter, because they wanted to have a voice, and you know, the images and videos are what they were, but what was the lens that you saw that through?
Well, I mean, it impacted a lot of the lyric for sure. This year, to see a civil rights movement characterized in a very dishonest way. Caricature, is that the right word? Caricaturized.
Sure.
As some sort of violent uprising. It was painful. Like, it was painful for me because I know that they did that to Dr. King. It's Doc, you know, right now we're celebrating this man's life and his legacy. And in his last, year, he did not enjoy popularity. He was most unpopular before they killed him, before they assassinated him. 75% of Americans disliked him. And they wanted him to stay in his lane, and he didn't want to stay in his lane.
Sure.
He got some civil rights legislation passed, but he kept on pushing, and he was bugging everybody. He bugged the president. He was bugging everybody, and especially Christians, man, especially Christians. And he was critical of them. He's like, "Where are you? We need you, and you're just hitting there throwing stones, telling me to stay out, telling me not to be an outside agitator." And they would take Dr. King's he's stressed and emphasized peaceful protest so much. Just as all the protests I've been to, same thing. My girls helped organize a protest in our neighborhood, a peaceful march, right? And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. We went to one downtown Franklin. We've been to events downtown Nashville and in our region, both to stand up for the rights and for equality with our Black brothers and sisters, but also for the rights of DACA recipients and refugees and immigrants, because all people of color, especially in this last decade, just the fear and the attack and the dehumanizing, the war that many people that go to church buildings and oftentimes church building leaders, they're not at war with children from Mexico or with Syrian refugees. They're at war with God, because those people that they're attacking are made in the image of God. And that has been difficult for me to see. And I never understood how people could have waited to get on board with Dr. King. where were they? Where were all the good people? Why was he so frustrated? I never understood how that could happen until 2020. And then I realized.
Yeah.
Misinformation, disinformation, and the generalization of a whole people group by the actions of a few. It's something I never want to take part in. I never want to and I do it, you know. People could say I'm doing it with religious people. I'm generalizing religious people. And I don't want to, you know. I want to remember that you and I, regardless of our political differences, regardless of our theological differences, we're both made in the image of God. And I want to use my voice and my interactions with other people to try to breathe oxygen on that spark. But it's hard because we have to be honest too.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'm just rambling.
That's good. You know, and you know, this goes back to Jesus. Like back in the day, there's some translations that would say his interactions with unclean people. And, you know, he was not the, you know, revisionist history says that he was somebody that united people, but he was divisive. Like he was somebody that was hated, and that's why he was killed ultimately. So one of the songs that is one of my favorites on the album, it's kind of a mellow song, but it's a song called, let me get this right, Using My Name, is that right? And that has really touched home with me because I've grown up, you know, in the evangelical world, and I've seen the good and the bad that comes out of that. And so I just kind of wondered what ultimately inspired you to write that and write it in a way that doesn't sound angry. Like that's a song that I would think if I would write it, it would sound like one of the most angry songs on the album, but it's a mellow song. It's not a song that sounds, you know, angry and I just kind of wondered what led you to write it in that way. And what led you to write it at all?
Well, I appreciate that it didn't sound angry. I have fallen in love with Isaiah in the last few years, ancient prophet, first person that was quoted by Jesus Christ. I mean, he was Jesus's first publicly recorded speaking engagement. He starts off quoting Isaiah, saying he has good news for people that are poor. And there is an element, and I don't know how to measure it, but it seems like the overwhelming majority in white evangelical culture, there's an element of bad news for poor people that movement brings. And I know that's a really awful thing to say, but I don't know how else to say it nicely. Like, there are people that need medicine, and their local church won't help them. They won't help them with meeting their physical, tangible needs. And they also are doing everything to organize in a very, very efficient way to keep these people from having access to medicine, having access to basic needs being met by the government, which I don't care either way. I want one or the other.
Sure.
Either stop burning through 95 to 98% of your tithe money just for singing and preaching and praying, so that there's crumbs, literal crumbs left from the table, because we need our Sunday morning so badly that we're willing to overlook the needs of our entire communities. A youth pastor said to me that he went to a senior pastor. He had this nice historic church in the middle of an all-black neighborhood. And he said, well, we just have all these middle-class and upper-class white kids in our youth group. Why aren't we doing anything to outreach the community that literally lives right here? And the senior pastor said to him, You're young, you're naive. I don't think you realize how much work those people are. So I guess the song started right there when that guy told me that story. And then you read Amos 5, Amos and Isaiah together, between Isaiah 58, Isaiah 1, and Amos 5. Amos is like, man, God's saying to stop singing. Shut up with your prayers, because they absolutely annoy my ears. They're burdensome unto me. Like, you have plugged your ears for so long to the cries of the poor and the oppressed, the refugee, the exile, the you know, and in our society specifically, black people have been saying for decades, this is still happening, help us. And you've decided not to believe them, but to believe the ugly words of politicians and preachers that dehumanize them. You've decided not to believe in the teachings of the gospel as it pertains to people seeking refuge, running from wars, running from violence. A lot of the violence caused by my society's lust for cocaine, my society's lust for cheap labor and cheap goods, and for cultural dominance. So I'm taking in all this. I spend a little bit more time than is healthy reading about the plight of refugees, reading about the plight of Arbery and George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And those are just three of thousands of stories, right? And then seeing a people group get so excited to tell me that all these stories, it's been hard that somehow all these people are lying, some massive conspiracy saying that
or they don't
that
matter.
This isn't happening, or that they don't matter. Essentially, yeah. a sanitized way of saying no, these stories don't matter. Yeah. These are exceptions. That was hard for me, you know. And then to see what I know goes on, to see it play out on January 6th, 2021, to see the guy with the blue face paint with the thing on and all those guys raising their hands in prayer and praying, standing on top of a desk in the halls of Congress. And all the, you know, they stopped, they took off their hats, right? So they have all this outward show, the cowboy outside, that all the signs that says Jesus saves, Trump is my president, Jesus is my king, to weaponize the name of Jesus, to turn him into a mascot for a civic religion of Christian nationalism. Maybe I should be more loud. It cost me fans. Just quoting Dr. King about nationalism on my Facebook page, some guy said, you know, it's calling people to boycott Rimini Drive. And I know talking honestly like this with you, it's going to make people angry, because I know that 80% of Christians are kind of excited about that type of idolatry.
Yeah.
And so Amos speaks from his grave. Isaiah speaks from his grave. I hate your songs, David. That's what they're saying to me. I hate your songs. So don't sing anymore until you're committed to taking the cause of the oppressed. Mm. And that idea is mentioned 2,100 times in Scripture.
Wow.
2,100 times.
Wow.
And I see people that know how to organize. I see, not in the black evangelical community, but in the white evangelical community, there is a very well-oiled machine that organizes for what? What do we organize? For our rights, for our privileges, for our cultural dominance, for our ability to sing together in the midst of a pandemic. That is what we're known for.
Right.
Me first, my country first, my rights. When I see very clearly in Scripture that my job is to organize and to take the cause and to lift up the rights of somebody else, somebody that doesn't enjoy my privilege, and to elevate their cause, not my cause. And so it's blasphemous. It's the antithesis of the teachings of Jesus. It's the antithesis of the teachings of James, especially his half-brother, which I jokingly but kind of seriously say he holds more weight than some of the other guys because of that. He grew up with him. Come on.
Right. They share blood.
Yeah. Half.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that, I don't want to, like, the whole conversation is not just about that, but it's also about, you know, what you said about Dr. King's teachings. And we're talking today about Martin Luther King. It's Martin Luther King Day as we speak. But what does he mean to you? And I know that he has inspired you to do what you do with the Exodus Road. And I know that's your passion. Can you speak a little bit about, first, what Martin Luther King has inspired you to do, and then secondly, if someone might not listening to this might not even know what Exodus Road is, like, what is that?
It's a good question. Sometimes I assume the Exodus Road is a counter-trafficking organization. we find evidence of sex trafficking and sometimes labor trafficking, which is when someone sells someone else for sex and there's fraud or force or coercion involved, or if the person being sold is a minor. We exist to find evidence of that. And then we partner with authorities to help these enslaved people escape their slavery, but also to dismantle the criminal networks that are responsible for enslaving people and responsible for this misery, to make it more expensive and more dangerous to partake in trafficking. That's our goal. And so far we've contributed to the freedom of 1,500 survivors of trafficking, and we've helped arrest 700 or 800 traffickers. And when you arrest one trafficker, that keeps them from, you know, from hurting dozens of more people, or hundreds possibly, in their lifetime. And 10 years ago, I started listening to Martin Luther King Jr.'s last speech that he did on April 3rd, the day before they shot him. And in that, he talks a lot about the religious people of Jesus Christ's day. And he's making an analogy to the hesitation on the part of Christians to get involved with justice during that time period. And he says that the same thing was happening in Jesus' time, where that religious guy said, you know, who's my neighbor? Because Jesus said, hey, a lot's been written, but really it boils down to love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. This one idea is what I'm really interested in. And so Dr. King says it so eloquently. The religious guys, they had their garments on. They're on their way to their church service. And then the other guy, the third guy, you know, Jesus, you know, people call him a race baiter. People would accuse him of making about politics, but he brought the hero of the story. The great man in that story was of a different nationality, a different race, a different religion than Jesus. He celebrated the actions, and he really, for me, in that story, it rings so true all through Scripture. But Jeremiah says, this is what it means to know me, says the Lord God Almighty. He took the cause, the oppressed. So essentially, this is personal relationship with Jesus Christ, acts of justice. That is what it means. Bono says God is in the slums. He's in the cardboard boxes with the poor, where the poor play house, and he's with us if we're with them. And so Dr. King says now is the time for us to develop a kind of dangerous unselfishness. And when he said that, the first time I heard that, it just grabbed hold of me. Made me feel this emptiness I'd never felt before. And this restlessness is the right word. And that quote, combined with a lot of other nudges and moments of convergence, led me to the Exodus Road, led me to leave my record label to write a concept album on fighting slavery. And that was 2014's Commodity. I'm all over the map today.
No, that's good. That's good. That's good. So
I'm just throwing in Bono quotes with MLK quotes.
Bono quotes are always acceptable here. So this album, you know, it's the third album in a row about this. My question for you is, when you listen to these songs, again, they're a lot about hope. When you talk about something like trafficking and even going back to like things such as oppression and refugees, like, These are like really depressing things. How do you find hope, and how does it end up sounding the way it sounds? Because for me, when I think about that stuff, it depresses the heck out of me. But for you, somehow, when you write, it comes out the way it does. How does that happen, and how did it happen on this album?
I've had to make peace with the idea that so often taken out of context and misquoted, with the words of Jesus that said, the poor you will have with you always. And he's quoting Deuteronomy when he says that. And the response is like, therefore, always make the poor a priority in your life and the way you live your life. And when I started out, like, I wanted to end slavery. At this point, I'm happy with just tearing a little corner off the darkness. That's I guess there's no way for me to not know this stuff is happening now. I travel too much. I have seen too much. Even at concerts, I met an awesome girl in Minnesota whose uncle had just been deported unjustly, at least in a cruel way. There's a lot of cruelty in our immigration system right now. And I cried with her. And I met another two girls in North Dakota at the beginning of last year that somebody in their neighborhood had turned their mom in for not having her paperwork in order. She tried to get a job. And I cried with those girls. And when I'm undercover in brothels in Asia, I see things that hurt me. It hurts deeply. But what they say of Jesus Christ from Nazareth, they called him a man of sorrows who was acquainted with grief. And I truly believe that when we intentionally acquaint ourselves with someone else's grief, like, I'm not trafficked, I'm not a refugee, I'm not running from war, I'm not running from violence. But when I acquaint myself with those who do and I take their cause, I start to realize that I was designed for that. I mean, who were we designed after? Who's the first of a new way of being human? Jesus Christ is the example of how we're supposed to live. So when you live putting yourself in close proximity with somebody else's sorrow, when you're consistently hearing those stories and having that truth, that reality impact the way you see the world, and not the false truth coming from politicians and pundits and billionaires that are so aggressively trying to protect their little kingdom and trying to protect their power and influence. Those voices are untrue. They're temporary. They're not going to last. They're corrupt. And that corruption can't last. It's going to turn to powder. It's going to disintegrate someday. But this other, the reality of the sorrow, the truth of the sorrow, and the desperate situation that desperate people are in that leads them to make desperate decisions, like putting a child in your shirt and trying to swim over the Rio Grande, or putting your kid on a raft and trying to make it from Syria to Greece. That sort of risk that people take on because of how desperate they are. Acquainting yourself with that grief makes it really hard to believe the lies of politicians that will dehumanize them, that will strip them of their dignity, that will call them an infestation, right? That's dehumanizing. That would try to make us scared of children. So I stay close to it. It helps me make sense of the world, knowing that I can't change these things. I can't, but I do have 5 loaves of bread, and I do have 2 fish. And like that naive kid on the hillside sees 10,000 hungry people, comes up, maybe he pulled on Jesus's blue sash, says, "Jesus, here's my lunch. Can we use this?" And those other guys are like, "Hey, man, get out of here." And I take a lot of that. Plenty of people saying to me, just like Peter said to that kid, "Hey, get out of here. You know, Jesus doesn't need your lunch." No, he does. You know, I don't know. I'm not a theologian. Needs might not be the right word, but that's what he's decided to use. It's your 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish and mine. And right now, it's your microphone. It's your platform that we're using to try to shine a light of injustice and change hearts. Maybe my melody can just change a heart and convince somebody to quit spending so much time and effort defending rich, powerful people and instead take that same effort and direct it towards the kingdom of heaven.
Well, your 5 loaves and 2 fish have meant a lot to a lot of people over the years, including me. So I appreciate it, man. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for your work. Thank you for your music. It's meant a lot to a lot of us. And especially in times like this, it's what a lot of us need. And I thank you so much for that. And I appreciate it. Appreciate your time. Is there any last thing you want to say about this album before we call it?
Well, if somebody wants to get updates when a rescue is made with the Exodus Road, You can text Remedy to 51555. And that's exciting because you get, you know, it gives you, it's hopeful too. And in all of this, I just want to, anybody that's listening, one, to know that I don't have all the answers. I never have claimed to. I don't know what I would do if I was in charge of everything. I honestly don't. If I was the Pope of like Christianity as a whole, I would shut down 2/3 of all the church buildings and use them, instead of for singing and praying places, use them to for the gospel according to Jesus Christ, which is good news to poor, freedom to the captives, liberty to the prisoners, a restoration of dignity to oppressed and downtrodden people. That's not my role. But my role is to make melodies. So I'm trying to work some of this out in melodies. And sometimes I'm working out my viewpoints in interviews too. So
give me, it's a perfect time to reflect.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much, man. That was our interview with Remedy Drive's David Zach. I would like to really thank David for joining us on this very first episode of 2021. We talked about a lot of topics. There was a lot to get into with that and unravel. Mostly, you know, something that always remains true in our hearts here at the Decent Christian Talk Podcast, to take care of the oppressed and take care of the downtrodden. It's something that Jesus has taught. Love your neighbor as yourself, and that's something that is more important. It's definitely not less important here in 2021.
Yeah, there's a lot of things on this episode that, whether it was meant to be or not, could be taken out of context, I guess, and politically charged. And if you feel that way, go back and listen to it again. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times those types of subjects get politically charged, and I don't think that should be the case, in my opinion. I think that those should be viewed through the lens of what Jesus taught us and nothing more than that, and I would challenge you to look at it in that way.
I think that if you listen to this episode and you were angered by something, shut up and go back and listen again, or if you listen to this episode and you decided to like pull something and be like, well, a guy from Remedy Drive thinks this too, shut up and go back and listen again, because that's not the point. I mean,
right.
In my head, I was talking to our parents today. I said, David Zach is a real life Bible character, which he would never, if he heard me say that, he would
punch you,
punch me in the face. I don't know. I'm just kidding. But one of the things I gathered from the first time I recorded with him is just the whole Christian community, just everyone in general, whether it's something as horrible as sex trafficking or even, I don't know, a hurricane or earthquake or something, a lot of people will say, well, somebody should go do something. Somebody should help them. And one of my favorite memes of all time, have you heard of memes?
That's how you pronounce that?
Meme.
Okay.
Memes.
Okay.
Well, it's when, if you're familiar with the story of Lord of the Rings, Gondor calls for aid, and King Theoden answers by changing his Facebook profile filter to being in support of Gondor, and he puts his Facebook status as, I'm here to help, and that's all he does. And then, of course, you know, if you know the story of Lord of the Rings, then...
Some of it.
Probably didn't go down very well when Rohan just changed her Facebook filters. But David is the embodiment of, well, why, if somebody should do something, then why not me?
Yeah.
And so if you would like to help David Zach's cause, the Exodus Road is where you need to look. I think one of my favorite things I've ever done is turn on the text notifications for the Exodus Road. Mm. and I get notifications all the time. Two girls have been pulled out of sex slavery. One boy was rescued. Like, back and forth, one person was arrested for sex trafficking. And it gives you these notifications all the time, and it's so exciting. So I forget the number.
Well, it was in the interview. So
it was. And you can find it on the Exodus Road, on the websites, on the social media. I would encourage you to turn those on and look into that. And if something Mr. Zach said while in this interview moved you to, you know, get up and do something about it, your resources may be limited, especially in a time where you can't really go into Thailand yourself and, you know, start Liam Neeson rescuing people. But David has those resources, and you could probably help him out.
Yeah, and I would also challenge you to check out their new album. It comes out this Friday. It is absolutely amazing. I've gotten to listen to it. You know, it's as we talked about in the interview, a lot of the songs are about the subjects that we just talked about, but it's also can be about you if you're feeling hopeless and you know, this past year has been really hard. It can be about your situation. You can make it what you want it to be. And I would encourage you to check it out. It comes out this Friday. It's incredible. It's going to be in the discussion at the end of the year of one of our favorite albums, I have a feeling.
I agree. And I think that he spoke a little bit about live performances. And not only is this new music coming out, but there's been a trend of live performances. I know Project 86 just had one. Yep. August Burns Red just had one. Silent Planet has announced that they're coming out with one.
Oh, cool.
So if you have a favorite band, maybe do some research to see, because as David mentioned in the interview, this is their source of income. Yep. And I would also encourage you not to illegally stream whatever concert or production that is put forth by these musicians. So go look. You can maybe support some of your favorite musicians financially. And then more importantly, like I said, go check out the Exodus Road. Because if you have the means to watch a concert via your screen, you have the means to help.
Yeah, that's well said. And you can check out the Remedy Drive store on their website. They have a lot of cool things made by rescued workers and a lot of great musical things that you can get to. But check them out. Again, the album comes out this Friday. You don't want to miss it. It's a very timely album, I'll say that. Hey, we're going to head off into the sunset. Once again, you can support our podcast on patreon.com/decentchristiantalk. If you couldn't get enough of us today, we'll be having a bonus episode about the debut of Third Day, and you don't want to miss that. It's going to be fun to talk about that. We also have a Instagram account, DC Talk Podcast, and we also have a Twitter page, DC Talk Act 2. We have two Facebook places you can find us on. We have a page for Decent Christian Talk, and we also have like a group where we discuss things, Decent Christian Talk Podcast. We also have a website, Decent Christian Talk. If you're into not doing a monthly thing, there's a place on there where you can donate a one-time thing, and we appreciate that.
Anywhere you look, you can find us, except you will not find us dancing on TikTok.
I don't even know what that is. But there we are also on YouTube, and I don't really know what I don't know it for sure right now, but there may be video involved with this show.
There may be?
There may be. We'll see if my computer can get that to work. But anyway.
We have new technology.
Maybe. We'll see. Maybe new technologies on the horizon here in 2021. But thank you for everything that you have done for us, whether it be listen or share. We appreciate you guys into coming into the new year, and we will catch you next time.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.
Don't forget to tip your waiters and waitresses. Thanks.